Word of mouth. From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Andy Warhol, Gertrude Stein, Nikola Tesla, and Pablo Picasso were all remarkably different in temperament and creative output. But they had one thing in common, a successful routine. Mason Curie started a blog of the habits and compulsions of history's most eccentric and troubled and genius figures, from Ben Franklin's naked reading hour to Igor Stravinsky standing on his head. Now he's compiled 160 of those accounts into a new book called Daily Rituals, How Artists Work. And Mason's writing has appeared in Slate and print and Metropolis magazine, where he was an editor for 6 years. Mason, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Did you come away with any universally successful routines to stir creativity?
Unfortunately, not really. I think the one lesson of the book is that there is no one way to do it, that everyone has to find their own way to do their work.
So anything that seemed to work for lots of them, it looks like caffeine figures way up there.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, I mean, even though there's no secret sauce to creativity, there are certain behaviors that come up over and over again, and drinking coffee or tea is definitely one of the most common. It seems, you know, not surprisingly, to be a way for people to kind of get the creative juices flowing and also to kind of get the discipline to finally sit down and actually get to work.
Well, that is one common thing. At some point, they do sit down to work. But it is interesting that so many created kind of sometimes rigid routines, which seem at odds with this kind of free-flowing nature that we associate with creativity. How do you think this boring repetition creates awe-inspiring art?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think the book does kind of run contrary to the popular notion of the artist as someone who waits for inspiration to strike. Most of the artists in this book, like you say, set aside some time every day for at least a few hours to do their work. And I think what that suggests is that, you know, artwork is first work, and that people didn't magically produce it, but they kind of had to grind it out over time.
Mm. You quote Ann Beattie, who says, "I really believe that there are day people and night people, and I do see that out of the many artists in your book, about a third of them produced most of their output in these early morning hours before the sun came up. Sylvia Plath, Frank Lloyd Wright, Ernest Hemingway. So literary types, what do you think it is about this kind of ghost time that worked for them?"
Yeah, I think, well, for a lot of people, I think it's just the time of day when they're free from distractions, when other people are still asleep, and there are limited ways to procrastinate, and you sort of, you just can focus better. But I also think a lot of people talk about there being something to that feeling when you first wake up, this sort of half-awake state that lets them get at the work in a different way than they can later in the day when they're fully awake. And also, you know, it's a chance to work on the most important work before all your other obligations of the day kick in.
Mm-hmm. In fact, you write about many who were just artists and thinkers or writers or painters, but some who worked in the real world. And I'm interested in those people, the Joseph Cornells of the world, you know, the artist who lived in this tiny house in Queens with his mother and his handicapped brother and just showed up for work every day. How do they carve out time? How do they create a routine for their work?
Yeah, that was one of my big interests in compiling the book as well, was people who, you know, managed to squeeze it in around a day job. And there are lots of examples. Joseph Heller worked in advertising for a long time, and he wrote Catch-22, working in the evenings after work for 2 or 3 hours each evening. And, you know, I think for a lot of people, if you can get 2 or 3 hours a day, that can be enough. The work really does add up over time, and the trick is carving out those couple of hours. Mm. And again, a lot of people did it first thing in the morning before going to work, or in the evenings, or by staying up late. I think, I mean, one thing that came across to me is that they weren't always the best employees that, you know, they made the creative work their priority. And I think that's really what it comes down to at the end.
Well, also, we read about Alice Munro and Sylvia Plath, the only ones I came across who worried about taking care of the kids. And now, let's just admit that maybe a lot of great artists benefited from having wives or girlfriends.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, that's one of the other big themes in the book is artists who kind of forced the world to take care of the practical details of their lives, whether, you know, they relied on their spouses or partners, and they were selfish in a lot of ways. I think, you know, one of the things that came across to me was that everyone I found made some kind of sacrifice to get their work done, whether it was earning less money or whether it was having a less equitable relationship with their spouse or spending less time with their kids or, you know, any number of things. It's like you kind of can't do it all.
Mason Curry's author of the book Daily Rituals, How Artists Work. He goes through about 161 different artists and some of the rituals that they put into their day so that they could creatively output. Well, let's hear about some of these very prescribed, some almost compulsive routines. I loved reading about Nikola Tesla. Can you tell us a little bit about him?
Yeah, Tesla was, I mean, there are a few figures in the book who are probably diagnosable. I think Tesla certainly had some sort of obsessive-compulsive disorder. He worked crazy hours, something like, you know, 14 or 16 hours a day at some stretches. But he had a very elaborate ritual around eating meals where he had to go to the Waldorf Astoria for dinner, and he had to be served by the maitre d', not by a waiter, and he had to be given 18 clean linen napkins when he sat down, which he would carefully fold into a stack not beside his plate. And then he also had to mentally calculate the cubic contents of his food before he could enjoy it. So he was someone who had a particularly bizarre and eccentric and obsessive relationship with rituals.
Truman Capote liked to write in bed. So did Edith Sitwell, who I had read slept in a coffin. Any of these other sort of myths that you'd heard about that got busted in your research?
Yeah, that was one of the challenges, was separating the legends from the facts. And I did try to only relate anecdotes which seemed to be true. I also read that Edith Sitwell liked to lie in an open coffin to get in the mood to write her poetry and stories. But I couldn't find a reputable source that actually reported that. So that's what I say in the book, is that it seems like it was probably false. But she did lie in bed sometimes. She would devote the entire day to just lying in bed and writing.
Mason, you know, I'm wondering, when you're looking through all these accounts of how artists did their work, and I found it also very interesting that you did a lot of this in a very old school way at the New York Public Library and other libraries. But, you know, we get this myth of the artist, right? We're in awe of them and how they did what they did. Many of them, of course, propelled by their own demons to self-abuse with alcohol or drugs, especially amphetamines, like Ayn Rand, you write about, and Jean-Paul Sartre. I'm wondering about how those abuses might have hindered some efforts more than helped them and contributed to this sense of you need those things in order to create.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to unravel which things were essential to people's creative process and which things were kind of self-imposed obstacles or impediments. You know, I think some people almost needed it to be difficult, or it seems that way from reading about their schedules and their habits. And I also think there's a certain amount of sort of getting yourself into this state of mind where you can do your work, and that may require procrastinating and getting anxious and sort of pushing yourself to this heightened state. And some of the kind of crazy behavior seems to be part of that.
Some artists also, of course, they took breaks. Some had healthier outlets, including epic naps or long walks as an important part of their routine. What are some of your favorite break techniques that you came across? And why do you think those are important?
I mean, one of my favorites, I think you mentioned, was that Igor Stravinsky liked to take a break from composing and stand on his head, which he felt cleared his brain. I think, you know, a lot of the rituals in the book are really just kind of elaborate ways of taking a break. And I do think that a lot of creative work, you need to kind of step away from it for a moment. Well, one thing that I heard repeatedly in interviewing people was that you should probably not check your email as a way of taking breaks because you kind of tend to get spun off into elaborate back and forth with people. I think taking a walk was one of the ones that over and over again people found really helped the creative process and sort of let them continue processing ideas as they stepped away from the work itself.
Some of the artists also became masters of procrastination and found a way to make it work for them. Now, I read that you actually got the idea for this while you were avoiding doing something else.
Yeah, exactly. I was working as a magazine editor, and I went into the office on a Sunday afternoon to try to knock out a story that was due the next day. And as often happens to me when I put things off until the afternoon, I just couldn't get it done. I was procrastinating, and I often can work pretty well first thing in the morning, like a lot of people in the book, but if I wait until later in the day, it's a real challenge. So that particular afternoon, to make myself feel better about this predicament, I was searching the internet for stories about other writers who shared this early morning habit, and I just kept coming across all these great anecdotes, and I thought someone should collect them on a blog, so I started a blog that day. And after a couple of years of doing the blog, the book opportunity came along.
Well, I guess it worked for you, Mason.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Mason Curry, he's author of the book Daily Rituals, How Artists Work. And we're going to leave you with Stravinsky's Concerto in D. We have no idea whether it came from the bottom of his head or the top. Mason wrote a web series that examines the artistic rituals and habits for Slate, and you'll find a link to read more about them at wordofmouthradio.org. Now, coming up, a daily habit for many, many artists is the sketchbook. The Sketchbook Project is making those private pages public and taking them on the road. Stay with us for that story when Word of Mouth continues.